Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this week, we've got Jason Mitchell back on the show. We always appreciate getting Jason's time. You know, we're always running this way, running that way. Jason's always on his way to another outdoor adventure. No different in this show. We get him on the line while he's on his way to do something super fun and outdoorsy. And we appreciate his time. What, something a little bit different, hopefully kind of cool about this show. We have an extended conversation. Jason and I had the opportunity to have this early ice conversation for a couple of hours. I split it into two parts. This week and next week, we're going to have part one, part two next week. Super excited to bring you guys this kind of content here. It allows us to maybe talk a little bit more in extension on some of these topics, you know, just having the time, as well as tackling some topics that probably require a little bit more of our time, topics that we probably can't really address or don't have the time to address in our normal format. So I'm really excited to have Jason on this show for the first time. We're going to do a two-parter here, almost like a series, Early Ice with Jason Mitchell. Let's get into this interview on the JMO Podcast. You know, last time we talked, we talked fall fishing, but it was almost like still late summer when we had that conversation. You had some fishing left to do, and then we're sitting here like always. It's fall, but we don't really know how long fall is going to last. And so how has the fall been for you? Kind of what's the status update, and how has the fall been? How do you feel like the fall bite has really been shaping up for you?
Well, you know, it's been a different fall. We had really nice weather early on. The temperatures were warmer than normal. Water temps were warmer than normal. I'm talking, going back into September, it felt like summer. And, it's like we went from summer to winter, that we had a lot of rain, we had a lot of wind. Water temperatures just crashed. And let's say the water temps, when they did cool off, they really cooled off probably quicker than what we see some years. And we were trolling crankbaits a lot, through fall, September into October. And then, around the middle of October, so maybe end of October, that trolling bite got a lot tougher for us. It's like, we're slowing down our speeds to like a mile and a half an hour, and we're still picking off fish. And then it got to be kind of a thing where it just felt like we're getting better fish and catching more fish just live bait, jigging the middle below the boat. And, just kind of slowing it down and getting really methodical. And so, and that's probably pretty normal. You'll see that crankbait bite go until, that water temp gets to the low 50s. And then after that, it gets tougher. But you can still catch fish, either rigging or jigging with live bait. And mostly minnows, or you can't use chubs. But, one thing that I find is, when that water temperature, when it drops 5, 6, 7, 8 degrees in a week span, it does put the fish into a little bit of a funk sometimes, where you have to slow down and fish vertical. Well, if you do that, you'll experience good fishing, but you definitely have to change your tactics somewhat as the fall progresses. And every year is a little different. Some years, we'll see, a warm up right at end of October, early part of November, just kind of like a yo-yo. And you almost have to just fish that week, for what it is. And fish the conditions versus fishing what the calendar says, because if it's colder than normal or warmer than normal, that definitely influences, the presentation, sometimes the locations, and what you can do. Then obviously strong wind can really impact what you can do too, in the sense there's some spots where, it's just hard to sit out on the main lake when there's a 30-mile-an-hour wind, so you got to figure, okay, where can I duck out of the wind? Maybe your only option in a 30-mile-an-hour wind in the end of October is ducking underneath a bridge, or just a jig in a minnow. In those spots, they're community spots, but they can be really good in the fall because there's not a lot of people fishing as you get late in the fall, So, that's kind of what we're seeing is, went from, unusual warm summer type weather, early fall, to just it caught up with us. So.
Right on, man. And I mean, that's really the thing with fall, right? Is like the big variables are just going to be the conditions, the weather patterns, and whenever you have whatever the conditions are, when you have a chance to get out there and fish, is really going to dictate so much of it. Like what your presentations, where you can go, what the bite is going to be like. I mean, for the conditions in the fall, how much do you think like those fall conditions, weather patterns, I'm talking about, kind of overlap and kind of affect some of that early ice as well. You know, we've talked about it in the past, you know, just talking about how the ice forms and where the cold water is. I mean, talking weather patterns for fall fishing, moving that into the early ice conversation. I mean, you know, kind of what are your thoughts on that? Or what are some of the things that you're thinking about now, like the conditions that we're experiencing now, how that's going to affect some of the early ice?
Well, the biggest thing we've seen lately is just really strong wind. I mean, we've been, you know, getting hit by 30, 40 mile an hour winds some days. And like today, it finally weighed down to, you know, 10 miles an hour, 15 miles an hour. Then yesterday, it was 30 to 40 mile an hour winds. Like every third day, you know, we get hit with a little bit of rain, cold weather, and strong wind. And it's really churned the water up. And that's probably the biggest thing that we're seeing is that the water's churned up, and even the weeds are floating around all over. You know, you think in the fall, the weeds would die off, which a lot of them do, but you know, you get a 30 mile an hour wind, and there's some places that where it's really difficult to troll cranks, for example, because you're falling up all the time. And, you know, it does affect early ice in the sense that, you know, sometimes if you have really, really strong winds leading up to early ice, it negatively affects early ice because it stirs up the water so much. And, you know, you see it on Lake of the Woods. You see it, like, especially on some of the northern lakes north of Highway 2 on in the Devil's Lake Basin, like Lake Irving, Lake Alice, where if you have really, really strong winds and you get out there right away at early ice and you drill a hole and you can't see down 3 inches, the fishing is going to be tough for a few weeks. I mean, you'll catch a few fish, but it's going to be tough. And then after 2 or 3 weeks, that sediment that's stirred up in the water will have a chance to settle. And as that water clarity improves, the fishing improves, you know, and so it does have a big bearing, you know. Ideally, you know, you go into ice up where you don't have such, you know, strong, hellacious winds that stir up that water so bad, where you go into early ice with good water visibility. And typically, if you do, then you're going to have better fishing right out of the gate. And typically as well, you know, big, large, shallow basins get stirred up a lot more than, say, you know, like Lake Irvin will get stirred up a lot more than like a Black Tiger Bay. You know, Black Tiger Bay is long, it's narrow, it's more protected, it's deeper, you know, and so it doesn't have the same type of impact that you'll see on like places like Lake Alice or Irvin, because, you know, those spots, those areas are 6-7 feet of bowl that's just windswept in it. And it, you know, those areas, for example, don't fish as well when you have that 30 to 40 mile an hour wind. It takes a couple of days in the summer for it to settle and for the fishing to pick up in the winter time. I don't know. I think what it is, when the water's colder, it takes longer for that sediment to settle. Like in the summertime, you get a 30, 40 mile an hour wind, and it only takes a day or two, you know, maybe two and a half days at the most, for that water clarity to bounce back, where you'll catch fish pretty good again. In the wintertime, it's like it takes 2 or 3 weeks. And I think it's just because the water's denser, where that sediment doesn't settle as quickly. And so it does have an effect. I mean, obviously you can't control it. You can just respond or adapt to it. You know, I mean, put it this way, you know, say early ice, you know, you look at some of the first places we can get on the ice in the Devil's Lake Basin. It might be up in Pelican, some areas in the Minnewaukan Flats, and then Irvin and Alice. Okay. Those areas will get ice quicker before, say, places like Mission Bay or Black Tiger Bay or East Devil's Lake. And so I'll go up and check some of those areas right away. And, if the water clarity is really, really poor, I know I've got my work cut out, and it's almost a deal where you're just waiting for the ice to get better in some areas where the water clarity is a lot better. You're going to have better fishing until that water cleans up, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, man, that makes good sense. I mean, and I kind of want to come back to that a little bit, but also, like, before we completely leave the open water fishing out of the conversation, how do you think that, or what have you been seeing, you know, been fishing out on Devils quite a bit. What have you been seeing with some of this added moisture? Is there any impact happening whatsoever on water levels? Are you seeing anything, like any kind of runoff? Like how are you seeing just a little bit of moisture falling out of the sky impacting anything at all?
Well, we definitely have seen a little bit. I can't tell how much the lake has gone up. You know, I haven't been able to really monitor that. I'm sure it has, because we've gotten at least 10 inches of rain this fall. I mean, we've had more precipitation this fall than we've had all year, you know, all summer anyways. And, you know, places like, for example, the Blood Bowl up in Pelican and the Brinsmade Bridge north of the tracks, you know, those areas were good this fall at times. And I can only assume it's because there's water moving back and forth, which, you know, if you have water coming to the lake, you know, I mean, that I can see the ditches are running and stuff. So I know that there's water moving into the lake, and, you know, that'll set some things up. But sometimes that stuff can be wind driven too. You know, you take like the blood hole, you know, now the tracks are sticking out of the water. You know, if you just have a hard wind out of any direction, it'll push water up through that box culvert. And the next day that water slops back, you know, and so, you know, that those spots will be, you know, can be good without any rising water per se. And even like the bridges, whether it's Mabe Cooley Bridge or 57 Bridge, those are all good spots in the fall, you know, where if you just have to go and catch some fish, you know, I mean, you can go there and do it, you know, a lot of days in the fall. And just, you know, you have a narrow, constricted area where there's just water pushing back and forth. And, you know, you'll catch fish in those spots all summer, you know, just that they're, you know, get a lot of boat traffic in their community spots. For much of the year, you know, you're going to catch small fish, but in the fall and then in the spring, you know, there'll be some bigger fish around some of those spots at times, you know, and so, you know, but some of that is just water pushing back and forth, you know, and, you know, even like with the bridges, you know, I try to line up and I like to fish those bridges during the majors and minors just because it seems like when that current starts to rip a little bit, you know, that's when those fish will go. You know, you'll see it ice fish even when that current rips, you know, like it pulses like maybe, you know, twice through the day. And when that current rips, watch out, you know, you're going to catch fish. And when that current stops, it just disappear, you know. So, you know, those current areas are good, but sometimes that current is, you know, caused by just wind and a constricted area, water moving back and forth, and then sometimes it's caused by, you know, precipitation, water coming in somewhere. You know, either way, current will attract fish. I haven't really noticed anything, you know, over the top different this fall. I mean, it, you know, it's kind of fish the same as it has every fall. You know, just that probably the biggest difference is that we've seen that major cool down. It's like we just had a hunker down and, you know, jigging a minnow right below the boat, hanging it below the boat, really not doing much with it. But that might have also been, you know, contributed to the fact that the visibility was just atrocious. I mean, you know, even up in Calico, you know, you get that green water from all that algae all summer, and then you get that wind, and it's just all churned up. You know, the visibility is, you know, 5-6 inches at best some days, you know, after we get these big winds. And so that might have been some of it, too, is that the water was so dark and churned up that, you know, drop a jig in a minnow over the side of those fish. You pull a crankbait by them at a mile and a half an hour, and it just, you know, they just couldn't find it in time. You know, so, you know, I just, you know, some of the speculations I've had as far as just if you find something that's working, well, then you wonder why. Why is this working? Why aren't some other things working that normally should? And it might have been just water visibility.
The JMO podcast is sponsored by Long Haul Trucking. Long Haul's always looking for more skilled professional CDL drivers to join their team. They're a people-first company, and it shows. Their employee-owned, asset-based fleet of over 350 Conestogas is among industry leaders in pay and benefits geared towards long-term success and growth for company drivers and owner-operators. If you're a professional driver or a company that wants to ship product with the best in the business, get a hold of Long Haul at 1-800-255-5153 or find them online at longhaultrucking.com. Long Haul, running on the power of promises kept. Right on, man. You kind of already answered my next question. I'm going to ask it anyway, just in case you have an opinion on it. And that was just, is there anything unique about this year? Is there anything maybe kind of fun or different or maybe kind of disappointing that you're hoping or you can't wait to get behind you? You know, anything about this fall that might affect early ice this year that's maybe a little bit different or something that is making your predictions or your anticipations a little bit different? Or, you know, you kind of already said it was maybe a little bit the same, but I'm just throwing it out there.
I don't know. I mean, I try not to predict too much. I mean, a lot of times we try to predict anything you're wrong, you know, so you still have to kind of go through your process of elimination and put in your time, you know, but I would say probably the biggest thing this fall is, you know, we've had a lot of wind lately. I'm just, I would just love to just have a nice week here, you know, even in November where, you know, light winds, you know, 60 degrees during the day. We can start still wear a sweatshirt, you know, and a pair of bibs, you know, and it's just, I'm just looking for some nice weather. You know, it seems like lately it's been a lot of gloves and bundling up and, you know, you're holding a rod with mittens, you know, and you know, jigging, you know, with mittens on, and it's just been, it's kind of cold, brutal conditions. And a lot of times you get those cold, brutal conditions, a lot of times that's when your best fishing happens, because, you know, a lot of these good fall patterns, they do seem to line up when the water temperatures drop, you know, and that sets a lot of that stuff up. But I think we just get some stable weather for like a week, and some of this water clarity kind of clean up a little bit, I think we're going to have some great fishing. You know? So I'm kind of hoping that we finally, you know, get another good hurrah. But we've been out a lot here lately, and we've been catching fish, but I wouldn't say it's been great. It's been okay, you know. And we've been doing a lot of different things to catch fish, and, you know, catching a few here and a few there. And it seems like the windows are short-lived, where, you know, you'll have one day where it's nice weather. You'll catch fish trolling a roadbed of crates, for example. And, boy, this is starting to go. And then the next day it's 30-mile-an-hour winds, and you still get over there. You're somewhat protected from the wind, but the weeds are so bad blowing around in the water that you can hardly troll for 15 yards before you're fouled up, you know. And you're thinking, oh, so now I got to go find something different, you know, or, you know, because maybe that roadbed's just too long to try to vertically jig. It's, say, a quarter of a mile long, you know, so where do you start, you know? And so, or, you know, you get that strong wind and the fish aren't on top of it anymore, you know? And so, you know, it's like every game you've been having to figure out the program again. And obviously when you get really, really good fishing, you know, you can do the same thing for 3, 4, 5 days in a row and just ride it until it's, ride it for all it's worth. You know, we just haven't had that yet, you know? So I'm hoping we can get some stable weather and get some of that good, consistent, easy fishing versus, you know, having to fight for it each day.
Right on. And is there anything that you've been paying attention to, or is there just any, you know, anything in general that every fall, as fall is coming towards an end, that you're really trying to pay attention to as far as maybe where you're catching fish or how fish are setting up or whatever? Is there anything going on this year that you're really paying attention to that might help you be on fish right away early ice? Or do you just kind of look at early ice pretty objectively and you just, you know, kind of go with a blank slate?
Yeah, probably a little bit of both. I mean, obviously, wherever you catch fish in the fall, you know, the later the better. You know, you can almost, not always, you never say always fishing, but usually, you know, you can go there early ice and find those fish again, you know. And so, for example, there's some spots up in north end of Six Mile Bay, for example, and even some spots out in Black Tiger Bay and East Devil's Lake, where for whatever reason, all fall, there's been a lot of perch hanging out, or there's been some walleyes on a particular point. Like every time you go there, there's a fish there. Well, you know, early ice, you know, thinking some of those spots, it's not going to be too hard to walk to them, if nothing else. And it drills some holes right away. And I'm, you know, I mean, that's an easy shortcut to, you know, if you want to catch more fish early ice, fish as much as you can in the fall. And, you know, lakes that are fishing good in the fall and spots that have fish in the fall, late fall, you know, usually fish good in the wintertime, you know, and vice versa. There's a stretch that normally has a lot of fish, normally is a good spot, like say whether it's a roadbed or whatever, but for whatever reason this fall the fish just weren't on it. Usually at early ice, it's not like they just show up, you know. I mean, if they're not there in the fall, they usually aren't there in the early ice, is a general rule of thumb. There's always exceptions, there's always fish that prove you're wrong, but you know, that's a, you know, a good shortcut, you know. Because obviously, you know, I mean, you look at early ice, I mean, you know, catching fish at early ice can be kind of tough sometimes because, you know, a lot of times we are walking out, you know, I mean, you start getting 3 to 6 inches of ice, it's not like you just drive all over and check a lot of stuff. I mean, you park somewhere, you walk out, maybe it takes a half hour to walk to where we want to go, you drill your holes, okay, there's nothing there, well then, where do you walk to next, you know? You walk back to your vehicle and then drive to another area and then walk out again. I mean, you know, it isn't always easy that way, you know. So if you can, any type of information that you have, you know, can kind of speed that up, you know, or make it easier, you know. And so, that's one of the things that I find is that, you know, whatever bites you have going on in the fall, you know, a lot of times you can just chase them right into the wintertime.
Right on, man. I like hearing that because it almost kind of, in a way, motivates me to get out more in the fall if I even have the chance. It's like, you know, if nothing else, even just having a tough day, you can eliminate water in the fall or identify potentially a good bite that just makes your mouth water a little bit more for some of that early ice. And to move on, I mean, you know, we've talked about fall here enough. I want to get into early ice conversations Do you have anything planned for early ice? I mean, is this year, you got anything kind of on the docket for this year? Or are you still kind of going to maybe fly by the seat of your pants and see where the ice shows up? I mean, obviously, where we're standing right now, there's really no ice anywhere. But, you know, northern Manitoba, it won't be too far along. We talked to Brian Bogdan not long ago. I mean, moving on down into, you know, typically some of the stuff that you've gone on and filmed early ice in the past. You know, what do you got planned for early ice this year?
Well, you know, I always get on the Devil's Lake first. And usually, you know, the first time I ice fish is usually on Devil's Lake. Not always, but usually, you know, I'm watching that pretty close. And it's, you know, it's close, it's easy. And also, you know, just for the sake of fishing, you know, I mean, you know, a lot of times I fish, you know, not even worrying about filming a show. I fish just because I love to fish, you know. And obviously you have that lull where you know, you're not in the boat anymore. And you're waiting for the lake to freeze, and you can't back a boat into it, but you can't walk on it yet. You just sit there and stare at it. So can't wait to get back out, you know. And so, you know, I'll be out on Devil's Lake quite a bit. And I think we're going to have some good fish. I think our perch numbers are back a little bit. I mean, this summer, you know, I saw some perch, and, you know, I started catching them just incidentally, which I always think that's a good sign. Is when you start catching decent numbers of perch, especially nice perch, it's just by accident. You know, say you're pulling small grains on lead core, just a half crawler on a harness, and you know, you start picking up, you know, a handful of perch every day, you know, while you're targeting walleyes. It seems like those are the years where we have good winters. I think our perch numbers are up, just from what I've been seeing. I mean, I haven't, you know, read any net data or anything like that, but I can just tell you from fishing a lot that we're seeing more perch in the lake this summer. And it's funny how that ebbs and flows and cycles, and you know, it's funny, you know, like, there's a 3-4 year stretch where we didn't have any good bites on the main lake, for example. Everything was East Devil's Lake or Black Tiger. And then last year we had some good bites on the main lake again, you know. And then it's like, where were those fish the whole time? You know, I mean, you know, it's not like they just, you know, they were there, but for whatever reason, people missed them, you know. And I think, too, you know, perch have such a short life. You know, they're about 4 to 5 year old fish, you know, and so they can bounce back and plummet in a hurry, you know. So you can have great fishing, you know, big schools of fish in Creel Bay or Black Tiger, whatever. And the next year, it's, you know, like pelican's been quiet for a few years. You know, just get a lot of big perch on a pelican. Well, that can bounce back so quick, you know. And this year might be a pelican in a walking flats deal, you know, where, you know, that's where you got to go, you know, or that's where, you know, a lot of the good perch fishing is, you know. So every year's kind of got a new twist. It's almost unpredictable that way, but you know, like out on the main lake and East Bay, East Devil's Lake, Black Tiger, those areas in particular, you know, I saw, and then 6 Mile, you know, I saw a lot of perch through the summer, you know, and you know, you catch a few walleye fish, and then you start studying electronics. And, wow, there's a lot of them here. You know, you're tempted to just stop and fish them because there's enough of them there to target, you know. And so, I think that's something that I'm looking forward to this winter is the perch fishing. You know, then obviously, you know, we'll try to hit some stuff in Minnesota right away. I know we're going to be going up to Canada right away. We got to do a couple episodes for Travel Manitoba. Now that they lifted, you know, being able to go up into Canada, you know, they want us back up there to showcase some of their ice fishing opportunities. So I'm hoping we can just hop up with Bogdan and, you know, and do some of that stuff right away in early ice. And then I can't wait to get back to Lake Winnipeg. You know, I'll probably get up there, you know, maybe at the end of December or early January. You know, I'm going to try to get up there right away. You know, and, you know, like with Lake Winnipeg especially, you know, everybody wants to go up there in March, which is a great time of year to fish Lake Winnipeg. But I tell you what, you look at, you know, when a lot of the biggest fish get caught every winter, you know, I'm talking about stuff over 13, 14 pounds, and a lot of it's in January, you know, for whatever reason, you know. And so I like fishing Lake Winnipeg early. It's like, you know, you can catch some really, really, really top-end big fish that time of year. And so I can't wait to get up there and do that. But and then at the end of the day, I try to be an opportunist. I mean, there's a sloot firing somewhere. Or I mean, we're going to have some good sloots going too, whether it's North Dakota or Eastern South Dakota. I mean, there's some fisheries that are just primal right now, you know, for, you know, good numbers of big perch especially, and big walleyes in some cases too. I mean, we've got some great fishing on little lakes in both Dakotas. You know, probably some of the very best ice fishing in the planet is happening on lakes that are less than 5,000 acres. You know, know, sometimes less than 3,000 acres. You know, just these, you know, fishbowl sloughs that are filled up with water. They've had fish in them for a few years now, and no competition. All they do is eat until they get caught. You know, so some great opportunities right now in both states.
That's one of my favorite parts about being able to watch your career these last handful of years that we've been working together, because, like, even though you showcase a lot of the main known bodies of water on television, we make a lot of content in certain places you named, like where you're at, Devil's Lake, Lake Winnipeg, and some of this stuff, but you're also like, maybe it's a little bit behind the scenes. Most people probably realize it about you, but you're always trying something new at the same time. Like, between filming or whatever, like, the slough fishing that you're talking about right now, it's like, I know that you're always out there trying new stuff. We're talking about early ice. You know, if we were to kind of switch over from, just catching up on everything like this, if we're going to get down into like a scenario of maybe trying to discover something new, do you have any plans for, or could you maybe just describe your decision-making process when you're coming into early ice and you maybe have a couple of cool new little sloughs or new lakes or new spots, or maybe some spots that have changed enough to where they're just new to you that you're anticipating? Like, what is kind of your process for maybe going after and just trying to capitalize on something new early ice?
Well, I guess there's no real easy way, in the sense that I guess at the end of the day, sometimes it's just a lot of work. I mean, I read stocking reports and keep an eye on certain lakes. And, sometimes I'll just drive into an area, whether it's Burnsfield or down by Ashley or wherever. And, there might be four or five lakes in that area that have, pretty good potential, and I'll just go fishing, And obviously at early ice, a lot of times I'm just walking out or maybe taking a quad or a four-wheeler, some of them, I spend half a day on. There's probably a lot of fish in the lake, but for whatever reason, I don't find them. It might be a while before I go back there, And then other places, you find them. And, there was, a couple of lakes last year where, there was pretty good fishing right away. We caught some nice fish, and then it just, there was hundreds of vehicles, hundreds of people fishing within what felt like a week. I mean, it's just like, wow. I don't know where all these people came from, but it definitely slowed the fishing down. And then you go a few miles down the road and find another lake and all kinds of fish, but they're only 10 inches, but there's just catch as many of them as you want, and then you go another few miles down the road and try another lake, and, you drill quite a few holes and move around, and you maybe catch two or three fish. Don't really mark much. You talk to a few people, and they say, well, we got them here really good last Wednesday, and for whatever reason, they're just not biting that day, and they're not catching them, we're not catching them, so you just got to keep kind of pounding away. I mean, I don't have any type of formula or any type of secret where, I can just look at a crystal ball and, oh, this is going to be the lake, and this is going to be the day, and I just go there, catch fish at will. I mean, if people knew how many things I try that don't work and how many lakes I try that I don't, I'm trying stuff all the time, and it doesn't pan out, especially if you want to try to find some special bites, you got to be willing to just look at a lake and go fish where there's nobody else out there, and try spots where there's nobody around, and sometimes after spending half a day in some of these places, you realize, well, now I know why there's nobody fishing here. I mean, maybe the lake winterkill, I don't know, but I can't find mark nothing, and so, you're just putting in a lot of work. I guess there's no other way around it. And the harder you work, the luckier you get. I mean, sometimes you just get lucky where, I remember a couple of years where, like, the first lakes I walked out on, I mean, goodness, like, the third hole you drill, and you find the mother load of fish, you sit there for a week to 10 days, and catching all kinds of fish, really nice fish, and hardly anybody around you. Then finally, people show up and the bite slows down, whatever. And you think, boy, that was easy, but not every year is like that. Some years, it's like the fourth or fifth lake you check is where you finally find something good. So I think you just have to be persistent. I don't know if it's something where if you're armed with knowledge, like, you're more dangerous. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think you just have to be persistent and just put your head down and just keep going, you know. And you know, and if you just have that mentality that if you have a tough day, you know, it doesn't really bother me. I've had so many tough days of fishing. What more are you going to kill me? You know, and just, you know, just kind of have that attitude where you don't care if you catch them. You don't care if you don't. I mean, obviously you want to catch them, but you can't be scared of not catching fish, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Because if you're scared of not catching fish, then you'll never try anything that'll, you know, could potentially be great, you know?
Yeah.
And so you just have to just go fish, you know?
Yeah, I think that's really such a good message, but I even want to unpack that a little bit more because I feel like that's exactly what, you know, somebody like me 10 years ago would, I wish I could have heard that or listened to that, because I was, you know, kind of scared to try new things without somebody holding my hand or without, you know, some sort of like proven, you know, like some kind of, you know, somebody good information coming to me, some kind of a lake report saying that they're really going or whatever, you know, before I'd ever really jump into something. And then even then fishing, I was probably too late and the fishing wasn't as good for me as it was for who found it. You know, it just kind of like takes time. But I love having this kind of conversation. There's got to be something in your experience. Like, you know, our last guest, we had Josh Teigen over in Wisconsin. I know you know him. I know, you know, we know he's a fish head. And I really, it was, we had a little bit of our conversation where, you know, if when you're looking at a new lake or whatever it is, a new spot, like having some type of an evaluation of, say, the conditions. You know, when you go into a new spot and maybe the conditions aren't perfect, like how do you make an evaluation of yourself and just how much of a representation of what's there did you really get? I mean, you know, like for you, when you're looking for new places, do you kind of try to favor a good fishing day? That way you know you can eliminate that water with a little bit more confidence. Or sometimes when you find yourself on what should be a good lake, things are looking good, but the daily conditions maybe aren't perfect. Like at what point in time do you really eliminate that spot and the hard work is over and you're going to move on to the next thing? Or maybe you leave there thinking, you know what, I should really go back.
I don't know. I think sometimes as anglers, we can really overthink things. You know, like you can't control the weather. You can't control a lot of things. You know, you just put in a little bit of time. You know, sometimes the fish surprise you. You know, I've always felt like, you know, when you drill holes in a lake and see if the water has a smell to it, and it's really like yellow and has a lot of color. It's almost like, usually I don't ever catch fish in that. It's like, you know, when you drill those holes and it's just bad looking water, it's like, you know, usually either there's no fish or there's no bite, or, you know, that's just kind of an observation, I guess. But I've had the fish prove me wrong, you know, at times. I mean, there's been times where, we've got on some pretty good perch bites and, you know, where the water was kind of yellow and it was, you know, you could barely see down a 6-inch hole. The water was really dirty and, those fish would come through and every one of them would eat, you know? And so sometimes you have to let the fish prove you wrong. You know, don't make up your mind too much. I mean, you can have your experience and you can have your observations from the past, which will help lead you to in your decision-making. But sometimes you have to give the fish an opportunity to prove you wrong as well. Sometimes you'll be delightfully surprised, you know? But, you know, as far as like the information and stuff too, you know, one thing I will say is that by the time something becomes common knowledge where it's everybody in the coffee shop's talking about a bite, it usually is over, you know, because it's not like the fishing gets better. You know, I mean, you take a small lake and all kinds of people on it, you know, the big thing is if you don't have anybody around you and you're on a lake full of fish, those fish are coming underneath you all day where you can just sit one hole and just run traffic. And there's so many fish around that you can just sit where you're them out. Whereas if you have people sitting on each side of you, there's people all around you, you know, they're picking them off as they get to. So those schools get broken up. They're not competing against each other. They're not, you know, there's fewer fish that swim underneath you because some of them got caught before they ever get to you, you know. And so, you know, usually, you know, the best fishing is when you can find the fish and you're kind of by yourself. You know, I mean, that's when you get some of your very best bites. I'm 100% convinced of that. It's not like the fishing gets better when all the people show up, you know. And so you're, you know, in order to do that though, you gotta be willing to try things that don't work. it usually by the time you hear something, it's kind of over, you know. And the other thing too is if you're out every day, you're putting in the work and you're fishing hard, you're gonna have people around you in your circle that are putting in the same amount of effort. So, you know, the information that you get is gonna be way better than if you don't hardly ever fish. The information that you get is gonna be from, you know, other people that are putting in the same amount of work as you are. Well, just, you know, stuff they hear on the street. Well, by the time it gets to you, it's past tense, you know. And so, you know, that's one thing I would say too is that, you know, networking is important, really important. I mean, networking, you know, I mean, that's a big part of what we do. You know, we get on lights and stuff a lot of times. It's from networking. You know, people telling us about something. But, you know, you only get information as good as you're able to give, you know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
so,
man.
If you're fishing a lot and you're in a circle of buddies that fish a lot, well, you can really break down stuff quickly and share that information and help everybody, you know. But if somebody isn't putting in that effort, they're probably not going to be in your circle, you know. They're not going to get that information, you know, unless they can contribute something, you know. And so, you know, that's something to kind of watch out for. Maybe some people don't realize that, you know, if they're not fishing much or their group of people aren't fishing much, you know, they're trying to rely on that network. Yeah, it's just too old. It's too old by the time it gets to you.
Is there any, like, anything new or, you know, I mean, I know you're, like I said before, I have a ton of respect for the kind of guy you are that's will. You're like a glutton for punishment. How many millions of times we've told ourselves that, like, no one's willing to put in the work hardly as much as you are, like we're talking right now. And you know, for you, is there anything new? I mean, you know, without, you know, cannibalizing any ideas that you might have, is there anything cool or new that you think you're going to try or this early ice, maybe looking for some new type of a pattern? Is there any new gear recommendations or any new tackle that you think might help you combat? I mean, you know, or maybe I could circle this back around. You know, we're talking about the conditions and the potential for this windy conditions to make for, you know, some turned up water, early ice. You know, is there anything that you do to combat that? Have you found any tricks or anything kind of, you know, anything that you could pass along that has maybe helped you catch a couple more fish in those conditions if they're a little bit more unfavorable?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, you know, again, you know, you try different things until you find something that sticks, you know. And one thing I will say, though, is that sometimes these sloughs do get churned up and the water clarity is poor. Sometimes dead sticks can really be the answer, and which, you know, I gotta beat that into my head because I'm not really a dead stick guy, to be honest with you. I'd rather have just one rod and a Vexlar and drill holes and go, and they're either there or they're not. But sometimes, you know, when that water's churned up, I mean, you can just sit in a spot with, you know, basically bobbers and minnows or dead stick in a minnow, plain hook in a split shot, or a small jig in a minnow, just, you know, 6 inches off the bottom, 3 inches off the bottom, whatever it is. And sometimes, more often than not, that could be the answer. And what to make that tougher is that you almost have to slow down and pick your spots and give your spots a little bit more time, you know. But, you know, there's a couple of things that were kind of eye-opening, you know, last couple of years for me with especially using stuff like live sight or panoptics or active target, is that, you know, you can use those tools to find fish, you know, especially over basins, okay? Once I find fish, I'd still rather use a Vexlar just because there's just a little bit of a leg and all that kind of stuff, and I find that once a fish is right below me, that deep angle is so much more intimate with a Vexlar. But at the same time, some of those, you know, some of that new sonar technology can teach you a lot. And one of the things that really opened up my eyes, especially ever envisioned, ever imagined before I had that technology. And, I mean, I'm talking about if you have your screen set at 30 feet, I mean, those fish are flowing through at 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 1,000. They're swimming across your whole screen. I mean, they're like running. I mean, they're just cruising. And, you know, it's like, if you keep trying to chase them, you just can't. It's like chasing ghosts, you know. And some of it is sometimes when you have 3, 4, 5 inches of ice and you're in 6, 7 feet of water, you know, those fish are spooking from you, you know. And I remember one time last summer we were down in South Dakota, you know, and we had you know, we were using panoptics, and then, you know, once we got on fish, you know, we'd use our Vexlars, and, you know, we were chasing these fish around. I don't know how many holes we drilled, but I mean, lots. I'm talking hundreds of holes chasing these fish around all day, and we caught some fish. But at the end of the day, the people that, you know, didn't have any electronics and were just sitting on buckets with bobbers and minnows probably caught more fish than we did, because they just sat, and those fish, they're moving so much that they get away from us. They just kept, you know, every 10 minutes they would swim underneath them and they'd catch a few, you know. And so, you know, sometimes you kind of get your eyes open to different things where, you know, sometimes you're better off just hunkering down in an area using dead sticks and just waiting them out. If the fish are moving that much, you know, you can run traffic, you know. And so, you know, there's always, you know, things to learn. And, you know, so you take some of this new technology, it's not the end-all be-all. I mean, it's very educational. It teaches you a lot, but you have to, you know, you have to be willing to apply that information to your fishing to make you, you know, more dangerous, if that makes any sense. You know, so, you know, that's the thing, is you get something in your head with fishing and you develop a certain style or a certain way of doing things, and sometimes you realize, you know what, I got to go back to this, you know, and be willing to be flexible sometimes. You know, probably one of the worst things that can happen to an angler is if you have too much pride. You know, I've seen it where one person's catching all kinds of fish and they're, you know, using a glide bait or whatever, and you know, you got a person sitting next to them that just refuses to change. You know, it's like, why not? You know, this usually works. This is what I caught him on last week or whatever. Don't be so prideful. You know, swallow your pride. Do whatever you got to do to catch fish. You know, so you'll see that a lot. I don't know why, but people get prideful, and sometimes with fishing, it can really bite you.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into this part one of early ice conversation with Jason Mitchell. We're just starting to unpack some really great topics and concepts, having Jason on for this long. And tune in next week. We have part two coming, and we're going to just get into way more early ice, great ice fishing conversation for this time of year, anticipating this next season of ice fishing. Thanks for sticking with us. We'll see you on the next episode, part two, early ice conversation with Jason Mitchell.